You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
If I ever wake up and never feel like being in front of a microphone again, it'll be the saddest day of my life. If someone said to me, if you were not paid to do it, would you still do it? And I said, absolutely. You know, it's what I want to do until they bury me. I'm going to be behind a microphone.
Smile FM, if you are listening, senior management, he will do it for free. Just stop his paycheck. He'll be absolutely fine.
Hooray!
My guest on the Dan Nichols Show this week is somebody I go back an alarming amount of time with. It's now counted in decades rather than years, which suggests that neither of us are quite as young and carefree as we once were. He is an icon of South African radio. He's been doing breakfast or drive, or in some cases both at the same time, for as long as I can remember. More importantly, he's a very good friend, Ryan O'Connor.
Phew, here we are. So lovely to be me in the Dan Nichols building in Seapoint.
One of many I have across the country. I was thinking back on my way in here this morning of the first time we met. And I think I had been asked to do some stadium announcement work at Newlands Cricket Ground. And I was set aside this young guy who was a weather reporter from Good Hope FM, who insisted, and you'd be cancelled in seconds for trying it now, insisted on doing the entire job in a very bad Pakistani accent, pretending to be Inzamam ul Haq. And I was thinking, as this happened, A, this guy's got no future in the entertainment industry, and B, this is the last time I'm ever seeing him because he's very annoying and we could never be friends. And now it's
That was the 90s.
That was 25 years ago.
It was the end of the 90s.
And we were still both finding our way and trying to do stuff. And in almost no time at all, you had graduated to the star of Good Hope FM and I had graduated to doing the afternoon drive show on UCT Radio.
Yeah.
So your career was absolutely flying, and I was still waiting tables, mostly. And that's the consistency to who you are and what you've done, is that with everything, radio just flows through your veins like nobody I've ever met.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it's a medium that I grew up listening to. It's one that resonated with me from as far back as I can remember. I mean, alarm clocks used to have radios in them to wake people up or put them to sleep at night, and I used them as both. And I think in a kind of a mixed way growing up, it was the only certainty I really kind of had. And coming and thinking of it now, back to it now, many moons later, thinking about the childhood I had and kind of my folks going through a divorce when I was 5 years old and kind of having, you know, the one certainty I always had was believe it or not, that radio. It was there. That was the companion I never knew I really needed growing up.
And radio has that ability, particularly with the kind of shows that you do, where you feel part of that family, even if it's only a one-way street and you're waking up in the morning and your shows have never been the Ryan O'Connor Show. Yes, you've been hosting them, but you've always brought everybody else in. And so I know when I'm listening to you in the morning, I'm listening to a group and I might not have met half the people, but they feel like they're friends of mine because of what you create in that space.
Yeah, it's been, I must say, again, and it comes to teams and the teams you have, you know, it's a weird thing. You know in your space that you've occupied, whether it be TV or on radio, that you work well when you can include and bring other people out and bring them. It certainly takes the pressure off your shoulder to having to tap dance the whole time, having a team of people to rely on, to bring in its family members and eventually become, you know, a part of the setup on a radio show.
Now, obviously, the way I'm doing the podcast now, there's nobody else but me because I don't want anybody
else to get the other people.
Well, there's a guy called Simi who I think Home Affairs have been looking for years now. But you share. Not everybody in our entertainment does that. Not everybody shares. Yeah. A lot of people like to keep it. It's all about me. Whereas you've always been very, very happy to spread that love around.
I think yes and no to a degree. You know, I like the fact that after 9 o'clock or after whatever time of day it is, I kind of go and do my own thing. You know, I only have to be that team player for a couple of hours and then I can go. And I think it's given me that longevity because of the fact that it wasn't really about one individual making it, you know, worth their while. And I think even the current setup, I think people listen to me and they go, oh, not him again. But I've got two really young, dynamic people on the show that have never been in this kind of a primetime show before, ever. So for them, it's a new chapter in their lives. So if I can make them look good and they can make me look good ultimately as well for a 60-year-old man, that's quite a big achievement to be amongst a group of 20-year-olds.
And at 60, you are looking a lot younger.
Thank you.
Than I thought you would at this point. I haven't seen each other for a few weeks. You also have this relationship with the city. And I think all of the great breakfast shows have that, where you are, this is my city. You're waking up to the voice of that city. And across the 26 radio stations that you've worked for in the time that we have known each other, Cape Town has always been something. It doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter, right? We're celebrating. DHL Stormers are playing this weekend. We're celebrating. But it's also Pinelands High School is having a fete this weekend. You will celebrate anything as long as it's Cape Town.
You know, it's bizarre you say that, because a lot of the time, you know, when you chat with people, they say, what's the highlight of your career been? You must have had some incredible human beings you've had a chat with.
And thank you. That, thank you.
And literally you have. But people ask me that question. They say, what is the highlight in terms of celebrities you've had? And for me, it's the little old lady in the back end of Kraaifontein who's been a part of my community in the Western Cape forever. That is the biggest celebrity I'll ever have in the city, is people that live, work, and call Cape Town their home. It gets no bigger celebrity than that for me. And you can be a superstar in the city, you can be on the show, you can be a guest, but the real heroes in the city are the people that make the city work. And for me, when I get to chat to them and talk to them and have them on my show, that makes me the happiest oak ever.
And you have an extra perspective on that, because you do get to travel a lot. In fact, few people engineer freebies quite as effectively as you do. In fact, I think 2004 was the last time you actually paid for anything that anybody can remember. Yeah. And I think one particular trip we did, where we went to New York, and I only discovered afterwards that I'd paid for it. And we had an amazing time. We had a great trip. But I still remember speaking to you a few days after we got back, and you said, oh, yeah, New York was amazing, but gee, it was good to be home.
Yeah.
And Cape Town is both written large in who you are, but also you get that appreciation. Yep, New York's really cool. London's great. Scotland's fantastic. But Cape Town's where I want to be.
It is. And I mean, I think we've both had the opportunity to your point, to travel the world and see the world. And it's been great. I love it. Don't get me wrong. You know, there's a couple of those trips you mentioned that that have been kindly sponsored by other people coming up again. And it's lovely to go and see it and be a part of that. But to come home. There's just something special about the city that makes it, you know, extra special to be able to connect with it and its people. And I think that if I ever wake up and never feel like being in front of a microphone again, it'll be the saddest day of my life. You know, if someone said to me, if you were not paid to do it, would you still do it? And I said, absolutely. You know, it's what I want to do until they bury me. I'm going to be behind a microphone.
Smile FM, if you are listening, senior management, he will do it for free. Just stop his paycheck. He'll be absolutely fine. You do it for City that loves you. Top of the list of the adoring fans are three beautiful women.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's been a big part of your journey, but it's also been really tough element to that. And I know everybody knows Ryan O'Connor is a guy who never stops smiling. He's always chatting and joking. He's got a hug and a laugh. And you've given so much of yourself to people. But it's not been a trip completely smooth sailing.
No.
And especially as a dad, you've had arguably as difficult a chapter as anybody will encounter.
I think, it's spot on, Dan. I think that, you know, once you get married and you kind of get to a point in your life where you start talking about starting a family, and you start going through the processes of, you know, trying, which is always the best part of starting a family, and the persistence of trying to start a family. And after a while, you start going, well, where do we go to next? And unashamedly, there comes a time where you've got to start questioning things like, well, what are we doing here? You know, we've tried everything. Surely we should go see somebody about this. And for Corin and I, it was a big decision, because you kind of think, well, where do we begin? Where do we begin the decision, and what's wrong? You know, why can't we fall pregnant? Why can't we have kids? And so I've got to say to all the men out there, and it's normally quite a weird thing, because women are obviously, from an emotional point of view, there's a lot of emotion attached to trying to have kids and having kids. And the whole question around fertility often becomes a very, very sensitive one, and rightly so. You know, people, you know, you almost feel like, what's wrong with us? What's wrong? Should we be embarrassed about what it is that we're having difficulty with in trying to fall pregnant? And it was such a great experience in terms of just learning about one another and the process of what stops couples having kids. In our case, Corin has problems with endometriosis, and she's got a couple of other issues that women live with perfectly fine. But it, unfortunately, it hinders people, you know, a woman falling pregnant. And we went through procedures, and IVF was an option for us, and we looked at a couple of IVFs. And let me tell you, again, to all couples going through that, the medication, Dan, that you've got to be – not me. I should be medicated. You need the medication. But shame, your poor partner literally goes through a gauntlet of medication to in order for her to be in a position where she's fertile enough to be able to even attempt to fall pregnant. So those cycles, they're hectic and they're crazy and they're this mixed bag of emotion on an hourly basis. I would leave home with a happy wife and come back wondering where the knives are in the kitchen. So this joyous dance of falling pregnant via these amazing scientific ways became a 10-year journey for us. And eventually we were on the verge of giving up. And a costly one at that. You know, it's something that at this stage, as we speak now, it's about an 80,000 rand procedure per procedure. And for many, it's a multiple cycle procedure. They go for IVF treatments for you can do 10, 11, 12 cycles. And then there's R1 million already done on just on IVF cycles. But I mean, ultimately, if you can afford it, you keep going and keep going as much as you can. We'd given up that. We'd gone, okay, listen, we're not going to fall pregnant this way. We've given it our best bash. The doctors are going, one more. I'm going, really? I mean, one more where, you know, how this is. And for Karen's sake as well, she just reached a level where we couldn't go any further. And believe it or not, within 2 months of stopping treatment for IVF, Karen falls pregnant. And the heavens open up and we're like, thank you, Lord. Well, I'll never forget where I was when the day we found out she was pregnant. We were heading off up the coast, up the west coast, to Feldrift, to Port Owen. We'd stopped at a place and Karen wanted to pick up a pregnancy test on the way out, the Bayside Shopping Mall up the west, on the way up the west coast. It's in Tableview. She still said to me, where do I need to pee on this thing? I said, you do. She said, okay, I'm going to go to the toilet here. I said, I don't care where you go. You can pee in the car. just go pee in the test. Let's go and sort it out. And on that West Coast road, that little pregnancy kit did come back positive that we were going to have. And so that whole weekend, obviously you couldn't say a thing because it was very, very early stages. Monday morning, I think before even the blood tests opened, full blood tests at 7:30, Corinne at 6:30 had camped outside the front door of the blood testing center to make sure that we weren't imagining or dreaming this up. And as it turned out, yes, it was all systems go and we were pregnant. And I think the relief, the joy, the emotional roller coaster of the 9 months that followed that all the way through to the very, very last day. So Karen was due on a Monday, or the week starting start the Monday. We'd go for a checkup. For those people that have been there, you know, you kind of go to, you kind of had to have this halter around your belly. Karen got strapped on with this halter monitor. It kind of picks up the baby's heartbeat and the kind of the variables between the different beats. And they can kind of sense whether or not there's any kind of distress, whether she needs to go have a C-section immediately or she can wait. We did that on the Thursday prior to the week beginning where Karen was due. And Sunday night, this old-fashioned Sunday night movie on Mnet, we were going to settle down. Karen's thing, the one thing she craved is a lot of chocolate. So the Steery Stumpies, they're a been in South African tradition for donkeys.
Yes.
Karen Sunday, every evening she'd smash about 17 of these things. So we were guaranteed of one thing. Baby's a chocoholic. We are no baby's preparing. And that evening, Karen had just finished a Steery Stumpy, number 14 of the 17 for that evening. And she turned around and she said, I think my water's breaking. I think it's time. I think it's time to, we need to get going. And of course, by this time, I had drilled it in my head where everything was. It was all reflex action. Grab the bag, grab the keys, grab the, with a 1 foot, open the door, side move her out into the driveway, into the car. Thankfully, the hospital, Panorama, great hospital, is exactly 108 seconds, according to my calculations on the Sunday evening, from my place. We got there, tires screaming, phoned the guy, I need to say, it's time, it's showtime. Get the lights, get the fireworks display, baby is coming. And at that point, I remember being whisked into the theater. I remember the doctor telling, as we were all going in, telling me, you stop right over there, boom. And I was like, but I'm the dad. I was super excited about getting in. And they said, no, we'll get you in now, we'll get you in. We just want to make sure everything's fine, everything's good. And I remember Karen disappearing into theater almost with gynae and one or two other doctors. And I remember standing outside And there was this eerie kind of silence, and I was pacing up and down. And it was during that period where I thought, well, let me communicate with family and let them know, hey, it's time. So called my in-laws first, otherwise I would have been in the dog box with my mother and father-in-law. Phoned them first. I said, baby's on the way. We were at the hospital, and we named her already before that because of the fact that we knew this was a lengthy journey. It was almost impossible. So her name was Grace, and we kind of decided on that unanimously. It just became to both of us that that would be our daughter's name. And it seemed like an hour almost, and it was probably only about five minutes that had passed. But that 5 minutes felt like forever because I'd made about 15 phone calls. I tried to call whoever I could call to share the exciting news that it's time, and I'll let you know what's. And then obviously it was followed by a million messages going, tell us, it's a day, baby, it. And so I was.
And this is after a decade. It's the great moment is here.
Up and down and up and down the corridor. And I remember the door opening up of the theater and the doctor coming out to me. And the doctor's. And for that split second, without the doctor even saying anything, she moved her mask down and she came walking to me, and she looked so embarrassed and ashamed to walk to me that I knew for a second I was frozen, and I just knew, well, I knew it was, this wasn't great news. Whatever was happening now wasn't great news. And she came up to me and she said, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And then I froze. I stood there and I was, what are you sorry about? What? And I just knew something was wrong. And she said, we tried our best to get Grace out. Mukoran had a placental abruption, and in the panic to try and get her out, obviously in a placental abruption, baby ends up suffocating inside the stomach and they can't get her out. So as much as they try and get baby out, they do their best, but at the same time, mom's got to stay alive. They're very mindful of everything, obviously, that's going on. And in their panic and in that state of trying to bring Grace out, she unfortunately didn't make it, and she by the time she was out, it was a bit too late. And for me, I was just so heartbroken for Karen. I think the one thing, the immediate response for me was I just saw Karen's world shatter more than my own. I just saw Karen's dreams, hopes, everything that Karen wanted in life for right now. This was it. This was the moment we'd both been waiting for. All of that just came shattering down, and everything that we kind of stood for, everything at that stage that you kind of think that you hope and dream for and want in life, just comes shattering down. And nothing on earth, nothing matters. No career, no. For that moment, you're both just two souls that are just, why did this happen? Why did this happen to us? And it took a very long time for us to come to terms with, I guess, not blaming anybody for it, not blaming a creator or any being or infinite power in the universe for what had happened, but for us to look at it and go, well, maybe who knows why, ever why, but it happened. And it happened, and what are we going to do to go going forward? How are we going to deal with this going forward?
Now, and that, for me, is probably the most amazing part of all of this, is that I think that would have absolutely broken so many people, broken couples, broken lives, and yet somehow, and you've always been a strong man, but the strength that you both had to stay together, to work through that, and to now be a dad of two of the coolest girls in the country. It's an incredible redemption story.
It is. And the weird thing is that the two girls, as much as people try their best to comfort and try and say, listen, we understand what it feels like. We've kind of, in some instances, other people have been there and been through that. And what broke my heart the most about looking back, and at the time when I was going through it, was realizing that if it hadn't been for a media spotlight and listening to my story being told, what about all the other stories out there of babies that have been lost due to the similar circumstances, due to parents, and that'll never get, that kind of sympathy, outpouring of love that everybody did for Karen and I at the time. And I, that was the one thing that really got to me, was that there were so many other people that had done that, been through this. what about them being embraced and loved for, and being, you know, looked after? It was mind blowing, that part of it. But to your point, I'd realized as well, I think shortly after that, that this was either going to cause the biggest, messiest separation in the history, or one of us had to go, I'm here for you. We need to come closer to ever. We need to be, you know, and that's what happened. I think Karen and I, we both felt sorry for one another, and it made us closer, a hell of a lot closer. And shortly afterwards, without even trying, where Faith came along, and hence Faith's name's Faith, because we'd almost lost any type of faith. And then we both share a daughter's name that is probably the best name on earth for a daughter.
Oh, it is.
Erin.
It's Erin from the old ancient Irish word, meaning I have no respect for my father, even though he's a very influential media figure. I think that's
the one.
That's where we share it.
And here we are, the 8 and 9 year old. I mean, that's how quickly time's gone. And often we look back and often we think, well, we would have had a 11-year-old, a 9-year-old, and an 8-year-old. And Grace has never been, will never be forgotten. She's a part of our family. Her sisters know about her. They know about her story. And Karen and I think now more than ever are grateful for obviously the support we had then. But when we hear of other families that are going through something similar, you know, it's so refreshing to be able to give back again, be able to spend 5 minutes with a couple, 10 minutes, half an hour, and just be there for them, you know, and say, listen, as far as we can, we understand. What can we do? How can we be here just for even to listen to you and listen to your story?
I've heard this story from you a number of times, and I was, and you, when it happened, and yeah, we've been friends for a long time. I still feel hollow at the retelling, but also just so admiring of you guys having that strength to persevere, because not everybody would have.
To your point, I think that comes, that's a kind of a crossroads where you kind of go, well, listen, is that it? You know, are we destined just to you know? And let me tell you, to that point as well, Dan, surrogacy, adoption, you know, there nothing stops you being a parent. There are so many beautiful babies looking for a new mom and dad. There are so many incredible human beings out there that play surrogates. I know, if you know Mark Ward, his wife is the most incredible wife on earth. I think she's busy with her fourth or fifth surrogacy at the moment, because she's got such a passion to give the gift to another family of life.
Hey, you talk about parenthood. Not long ago, we had a mutual friend of ours, Faf du Plessis, yes, on the show, and he described me as being his wine dad, which made me feel 107 years old. So there are different ways in which we can become parents. You've got that role as parent. You've also got that role of radio presenter. And it's a role that's asked a lot of you over the years, because predominantly you've been on The Breakfast Show. Mm. And I've always felt that the energy you've had, the drive that you've brought to being that early in the day, must largely be reliant on narcotics. But we've investigated and it's not true. You just have this energy, and you're not very good at sitting still and concentrating. These not Ryan O'Connor strengths, but you've channeled them into this remarkable, let's get Cape Town up. They're grumpy. It's 10 past six. I really don't want to be up in the middle of winter.
Absolutely.
But hang on, Ryan's helping me to feel a little happier, put a smile on the face and get up. But then they have to think, all right, you're doing that to them at 10 past six. At 10 past four, you've had to try and do the same thing to yourself.
Absolutely. 10 past four in the morning, he was pretty absolutely spot on. And the weird thing about it is when you go to bed the same time as your kids do, 7:30 at night, you kind of realize. And in winter, it's fine in Cape Town, but in summer, I mean, Cape Town's the best city on earth, you know, any time of the year. But in summer, on a perfect summer's day, to be in bed at 7:30, it's a crime, a sacrifice I've had to make for many a year, but happy to do so. And truth be told, I'm really not a morning person. If I was given and told, listen, you've got a show to do, you can choose the show, you can select the one you want, I would say afternoons for me. I say that now in life. I might not have said it maybe 20 or 30 years ago, but now I love the fact and the prospects of an afternoon show.
So I'm going to disagree with you, because I think after the first little stretch, you'd go back to remembering, yes, getting up in the morning is awful. Oh, God, I hate it. I have to go to bed at a reasonable night before. But I know how much you get out of that morning show and the energy, the start of the day.
I do. I mean, that's the shot there, right there. If you can get somebody up and get them up and get them going with a smile on their dial and to make it kind of a work for them in the morning, then you're right. Then the rest of the day kind of, it does lend itself to being slightly, you know, of better nature and mood.
It also means that you've by 9 o'clock your day is done, and you can then go and live it up, which means you're free to do cool stuff, which takes me to a story I must share, and that is you being reduced to a dribbling idiot on the golf course.
Oh, wow.
When a good friend of mine, who turned out is one of your music idols, was in town for a concert.
We're friends now, thanks to you. He follows me on Instagram. Do you know that to this day, Dan, to this day, I still pinch myself when I look at a story and I've opened up a reel and I have a look and I see that this individual has watched my reel. It's still a pinch me moment. And of all the people I could have ever met in the world, you introduced and allowed me for a couple of hours, not just introduce and have a cup of coffee, spend a majority of a day with, out of his life, in Tom Chaplin.
Well, let's clarify a few things. There were 41 people who were unavailable that day. I tried everyone I could. We then have to look at the fact that Tom is no longer friends with me, because I think you lost 4 dozen golf balls in the space that I've never. And it's not, I mean, you're not a great golfer, but you're certainly not that bad, but you were just reduced.
I was just reduced to a blithering
starstruck.
Idiot. Correct.
But I love that. Like, Tom's become a good friend through the Dunhill, yep. And we've got to know each other over the years, and Keane were out playing, and I know you love them as a band. But to watch somebody like you who's met everybody, you've traveled all over the world, but here was that one person, that chord got struck, and even the great Ryan O'Connor could not believe who he was spending the day with.
I mean, when you told me that he was due out here, I mean, this was before the concert was announced. I remember still saying to you, Dan, if there's one thing you can do, I mean, I know you know a lot of people, and it's fantastic. And if there's one thing you can do, just in the course of him being here, even if it was at the concert, and that's what I think what I asked you, it was on the night of the concert, is there any chance before I could get a photograph with him? And so I hadn't heard from Dan. Night of the concert, I'm at the stadium with a mutual friend of ours, Megan.
Junior member of staff for DHL.
We're sitting there, and we were standing there watching this concert, and Keane's performing, right? And there's a break. And the phone rings. I see it's Dan calling. I think to myself, oh, man, Dan, really? Keen on stage. I mean, I had to sit through, with all due respect, a few artists before then to wait for Keen to come up. Great. Fine. I was singing every lyric to every Keen song to Megan's disgust, who was looking at me going, who are these people and why are you so obsessed? You'd called. I remember handing the phone to Megan and going, Megan, answer Dan's call. Tell him I'm watching this band play. She answered the call.
She did.
She was laughing at something you were saying, but she said, Dan really needs to speak to you now. I said, the concert's on. I don't, what is it? I grabbed the phone and said, Dan, come on. Keen are playing on stage. What? He said, this is what you're doing tomorrow. And I thought, tomorrow? What's tomorrow got to do with anything? I'm watching Keen. Then you said, well, listen, would you like to join Tom and I in a round of golf? At that point, it was like,
I could feel your world stopping. It was hilarious.
You need to ask Megan, and I'm sure she's told you, how the world changed for me that evening. To say that you'd left me to go home and have a sleepless night thinking about what possibly I was going to share. And I closed my eyes, and Tom and I were running through the bunkers holding hands, skipping, kicking little tufts of sand.
And you did try that the next day, which was very awkward.
Dan, I must tell you something about Tom. What a great human being. Again, we get to meet great people. We get to meet people, right? Not all of them are great. Okay. And somebody who's, let's face it, he's a rock star. He's a rock. Keen, I mean, they are, if you know their stuff and you know their music, I mean, it played such a big chapter in my life. We talk about losing grace. We talk about music and how music shapes how we feel emotionally. His band played a huge role in doing that. And we sat afterwards having a drink, and I told him the story very briefly about the significance of his music in my life. And it was what I really wanted to do, because I wanted to let him know. And I'm sure, you know, artists get it a lot with their music, but for me, it's what I wanted to do. And you enabled me to do that. So hugely in debt.
Oh, not at all. I mean, you've done many things for me over the years. And you mentioned that, dear, you were telling him what he meant to you. But if you think of the number of times you'll be out at a farmer's market or you're out at a wine farm, or somebody will come up to you. It might be something as simple as, hey, Ryan, you played my favorite song this morning, or you know what, when you interviewed that person last year, that had a big impact. We'll flip that around, because the story that you told, Tom, and he did say that to me afterwards on the way home, that it's really great when you get that affirmation from people who you've had an impact on, because ultimately, whether you've sold 100 million records or you've hosted breakfast shows everywhere, you're still human, and you still, that interaction does mean so much.
It does. You're right. And I do appreciate that when people come up and they'll say things like that, and they say what an impact you had, or share your story, like what Corinne and I have been through means a lot to somebody else who's been through that, or is currently going through that, or has any kind of issues around the same issues that I've had, and Corinne and I've had. And what was just so weird for me is that it changes, for me, it just changed everything I don't think you even realize the impact that round of golf had on the way in which I you know, have looked and gone back and listened to the music again. I've listened to it. The same significance it had to me then is just so much more significant now than it was then, because now I know the guy behind the music to a minuscule degree. But I can now say, you know, that of all the things, somebody who had such a huge impact on me emotionally, I could tell them that, listen, this is what they've done and what their music was able to do.
And the impact went beyond that, because you had an 8% impact on the greater Takai economy through the replacement of windows at Sternberg. Together, I can't remember his name, but I think you bought your mechanic.
John Williams. Correct.
You bought along for the day. so that was a terrific day. It's one of the many adventures that we've had, but most of them have been around radio. And you've always been very kind inviting me along and joining you in that radio space. And you've been at it now for a while. This is it's almost three decades now that you have been on the air.
27 years.
27 years. Is there a horizon in sight? Do you think that you are ever tiring of it?
I don't feel tired, but I can sense that when I started, there were individuals that I looked up to that I thought were getting tired, right? And I won't mention names, but they're still around. Some of them still doing radio, but at that stage I could hear in their voices that they were getting to a stage where, you know, the microphone wasn't the biggest concern anymore. And I got to be honest, I can feel that. I can feel it to a little degree. I can feel like I'm getting a little weary. I can see possibly a talk stint happening in my not too distant future with another mutual friend of ours on the talk side. But I mean, as long as there's a microphone, as long as there's an ability for me to be able to get behind one and talk, I think I'm always going to be here trying to do that.
Yeah, and my worry is tuning in when I'm in Cape Town and I listen to the show and there's a lot more ABBA being played and early Diana Ross and a bit of Luther Vandross. So yeah, the music tastes are showing you up, I'm afraid, Mr. O'Connor.
It is indeed.
And in fact, they have been reflected, because one of the really cool events you got to do early this year, and I think you're on the cards for next year as well, was that revival party.
Absolutely.
Collection of people who had lots of one-hit wonders.
One-hit wonders. It was bizarre.
But, gee, they came together with a great deal of fun and some good memories.
It was. And I mean, these are stars that, you know, they're no longer recognized. I mean, they're really not. Had a way as a place here, just not from where we are, that he comes to all the time. And he says, oh, listen, I'm a part of the landscape in Cape Town. I come out, nobody knows who I am. I get to live this life. I've had a couple of hits in my life, and I've moved on. And you get together and you have this little evening of nostalgia. And then you start realizing, hang on a second, how many decades ago was this? Really? 30, 40 years ago, these guys were big? And you look at them and you see them and their charisma on stage, reliving that one hit that they've played for the 14th gazillion time in their lives, and trying to get that excitement out of the audience again. And I go, well, yeah, I've been around for a while.
And you got next year. Did I see Right Said Fred as part of the lineup?
Right Said Fred.
I'm coming to town.
Too sexy for my shirt.
Too sexy for my... I mean, everybody knows it.
It gets summed up, I think, by the fact that you've gone out of your way to make a career out of having a great deal of fun.
Yeah.
But fun that's been for everybody around you as well as just yourself. It's been tempered by some really cold, hard doses of reality, which you've taken on the chin, or
both of them, and moved on.
But landed yourself a career. When I think back to that guy with the dreadful Pakistani Inzamam ul Haq impression, who was clearly going nowhere, who was annoying as all hell, when you would never be somebody I ever wanted to spend time with. I now look back on close on 30 years of friendship, but also 30 years of admiration for knew what you wanted to do, and you've forged that career on your own terms. That's really admirable.
Thank you very much. And you know, the nicest thing about that friendship, Dan, is I think that you've remained ever true to yourself in terms of always wanting to do things for others. I think that, you know, if as long as I've known you, you've always had, you talk about the trip to New York. You don't tell everyone the fact that we went to the trip in New York for a great cause at that stage to the JAG Foundation. We teamed up with Alana May, and you said, you're going to run the New York Marathon. I said, no, I'm not. You said, yes, you are. And this is what we're going to do. We're going to raise funds, awareness, and we're going to bring running to New York and take it to the world. And here we are all these years later. And guess what? You're still out bringing sport to parts and regions of the world with a great group, the Laureate Sport group, but just in general, there's no part of your existence that exists without you doing something for others. So that's always been amazing to see and be a part of. Because, you know, after 30 years, while you say all these great things about me wanting to give back, man, I only learn from the best.
Well, we've been scripting this for the last hour, and it's come across very nicely. Now, I do appreciate that, but I think it's also we get immense reward out of the things that we do.
Absolutely.
And a sense of fulfillment. Yeah. And all the more so, I think, as a parent, it really does enhance that sense of wanting to do stuff. Speaking of stuff to do, I owe you an appearance on the show, so I shall be back to annoy you soon and
stunning.
Insisting on entirely inappropriate music selections.
We love, let me tell you, that's the one thing about when you come to studio, right? Is when you come in, I think the audience gets a sense of they know they're in for a bit of a dynamic morning, because there's wit, there's such a sharp sense of intellect there that it brings so much light to people's mornings. So whenever you're in town, you're welcome to come and up our demographic, up our LSMs, up the intelligence on the show, and bring in that typical Dan Nichols spin to life that you do so beautifully.
All right, well, I'm coming in to read extracts from my O-level history books, just to lighten the tone and mood of the show. Ryan, thank you. It's been lovely having you on. Thanks for all the adventures we've had, and thanks for the many more still to come.
Can't wait. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.